I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
When someone you love is facing cancer, you want to do more than send a card or flowers that will wilt in a week. You want to actually help. That's where the Balm Box comes in. Our care packages are built from research with over 500 cancer patients and caregivers, packed with items people actually use during treatment. Think soothing, practical, thank goodness I have this kind of relief. For you, it's not just a gift. It's a way to show up in a moment where words fall short. For them, it's comfort, calm, and a reminder they're not alone. From chemo-friendly boxes to mastectomy recovery kits, even options for men, we've made it simple to give something that's elegant, premium, and genuinely useful. And yes, domestic shipping's always free on orders over $50, because making someone feel cared for shouldn't be complicated. So skip the empty get well soon. Send real help, real comfort, and maybe even a laugh. Visit thebalmbox.com. That's thebalmbox.com. Balm, like healing and care. The Balm Box. Because cancer patients don't need bouquets and brownies. They need Balm.
What this book made me realize is how uninteresting Viss is as a main character.
I'm very disappointed.
The strength of the ew.
Welcome everyone to the Tutor Realm podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're reviewing The Strength of You, book two of the Hierarchy series by James Islington. I hope I got his name right.
Is it Islington? Islington? It is. It's James.
James.
Hi, James.
James the man.
Yes.
So, right off the bat, book two, there's going to be some non-spoilers for a few minutes to talk about the whole series. So spoiler-free for the whole series, books one and two. Then it'll be spoiler-free for just book two. So spoilers for book two, or spoilers for book one. And then we'll do full spoilers. So what this series is about overall.
Yes.
If you haven't read this series, the draw, especially the first book, this is a fantasy epic with Roman-inspired theme. So Rome setting, fantasy world with Mistborn level of magic system and details, if that helps.
Yeah, you have a lot of people that read Red Rising say, hey, if you want another Roman-inspired book, Will of the Many. It's more of your political machination side of things rather than your, I'm just going to kill things, Red Rising, but yes.
Yes, and the real draw, especially the first book, is you have our main character, Viz, a secret hidden prince that is just trying to survive, and ultimately in the first book, he is pulled from all sides, different factions vying for his help and attention.
Yes.
So he is pulled between all these different factions, and it's very intriguing to watch.
And to read. It's called The Will of the
Watch in my head.
Yeah, well, I guess it reads like a watch, yeah. in book one, the Will of the Many, it's called The Will of the Many because the magic system Rich is talking about the Mistborn-esque side of a mechanical, more system, a hard magic system. It's called will, and people cede their will to others. And in the structure of the society, there's this pyramid hierarchy where those at the bottom cede their will, which is essentially your life force. So power, strength, your
energy.
A part of your soul, basically, is just being ceded to somebody higher up in the hierarchy. And that person then becomes more powerful in ways that we find out more about in book two. But that is the magic system. So that's the Will of the Many. But if you have not read Will of the Many, we both reviewed it over a year ago. I gave it a 4.5 star spectacular. I loved it. It's an awesome book. The plot to that book is the standout. It is structured so well. And I was so excited for book two. This was highly anticipated. And I know when you reviewed it with me last year, you also really enjoyed book one.
Yeah, I gave it a 4.25. Really great.
Yes.
So I really enjoyed Will of the Many. Now, spoiler-free thoughts for book two.
We're going to be spoiling book one now, so if you haven't been caught up, this is spoiler-free for book two, The Strength of the Ew.
As you can tell by the thumbnail, not the biggest fans of this book.
We were sent ARCs. Thank you so much to the publishers who are never sending us anything again.
Awesome.
I had problems.
What'd you think?
I had problems.
Spoiler-free.
Spoiler-free thoughts. Okay, we know the end of the Will of the Many. The end of the epilogue. It's such a hook. It's such it's everybody's dying to read book two because it ends in just this most mind-boggling epilogue surprise of what? There's three of you.
Yeah, just the fact that we get three separate epilogues and the realization that we have three different vizzes.
Yeah.
So cool.
It's sweet.
The possibilities feel endless of like, oh, how are you going to take this?
Yeah.
So I was so excited for this book.
He's at the end of book one, we have Amissa, his love interest stabs him, going, why the hell did you stab him?
Yep.
What's going on with this labyrinth? Why are there three of you? There's now Obidium, Lucium, and Res.
Yep.
If I'm saying those correct. By the way, we're going to get a lot of the names wrong and mispronounced here.
The names here are very difficult. I was listening to the audiobook, and I'm still struggling with the names. Mm. So it was real hard.
Oh, recommendation too. If anybody goes into reading book two, which we'll put in the description below, I do recommend more physically reading only because in the audiobook, it doesn't tell you in the audiobook when you're switching to the different worlds. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the physical book, there's a symbol at the beginning of the chapter to show you what world you're switching to.
Or even you switch within chapters. It's not a very clear like, oh, this chapter's this world, this chapter's next world. It flops even within chapters.
So the physical read's probably easier to do.
Probably.
So just as a recommendation. But yes.
However, when I listened to the audiobook, I picked it up eventually. Mm. Like, it's somewhat jarring in the beginning, but you start, as it goes on, you start picking up, like, the names of other characters, and it makes more sense in context.
Yeah. True, yes. But, so, Rich, spoiler-free for you, what are your thoughts on the book?
I'm very disappointed.
You are.
Yeah. So here's the.
Well, were you just overall, as excited as I was? End of the Will of the Many. You're going in with all these questions.
I
right?
was super excited, and here's the crux of the issue. Mm-hmm. The thing I was most excited for, which was the three separate parallel vizzes and how each of their journeys are going to go. The thing that was most disappointing about this book, and I think the largest flaw, is separate having three different plots going on at the same time here. I think it made the book suffer immensely. Just the fact that we had three different vizzes.
Yeah.
That's the crux of the problem.
I think it's a structural issue here because we're still staying spoiler free with this, but at the beginning of the book you were introduced, okay, we know there's these three different vizzes. He has now been it's not a multiverse of like it's the same viz that's time traveling in these different spots. It is three different individuals.
And also when they start off from the beginning of this book, they're three versions of the same character that they are functionally the same. Not much time has passed for their paths to diverge and get dramatically different vizzes.
Which is what this book then does. And we'll how much do they diverge? You'll find out in Strength of the Few. Mm-hmm. I know other people that have been reviewing the book. It's for the most part, people are saying it's a step down from what I've seen on the critical side on BookTube.
Yeah.
most that's what I've been aware of. But I know some people as well has given this 5 stars. Love the book.
Yeah.
I've seen several of those. Like I know Patrick, Smitty, other booktubers have as well. But then you have, on the other hand, others that were thought still fine, but not as good.
Yeah. Daniel Green, I know, thought it was a step down. Yeah, yeah. Bookborn as well, but I don't think she liked the first book either.
She gave both a 3.5.
Yeah. Then our buddy Caleb, also, he was super fan of book one, and so he said that book two was a step down for us. So.
Yes. And by the way, if you want to join our Patreon Talk Strength with you, we're going to have a chat on it in the Patreon for not our official book club, but just as an offhand book club. So check out our Patreon, link in the description below if you want to chat some books with us in the Rambler community.
Ugh. Calling it a community.
The Rambler community. I just knew you'd hate the sound of that.
You thought right. I don't like it at all.
So for Strength of the Few, my spoiler-free rating is 2 stars. I think, yeah. And 2 stars on our rating scale means flawed. I think it's a flawed book, and I'm more disappointed than anybody hearing that score. Oh my God. I want to like it. I want to like it, but it is that's part of the issue, is the 3 different point of views to me did not justify themselves enough. And what this book made me realize is how uninteresting Viss is as a main character. Having to see him 3 different times in 3 different plots go through the arcs he does, just highlights how I would want to watch somebody else. And here's the other thing the structural issue did, is it took away from the things that I loved about book one, the side characters I loved in book one, the plot intricacies that made it so compelling, that the whether it was the plot twist or the different factions vying for Viss's attention, all of that is now split between 3 plots, and we kind of have to go through these training arcs with 3 different Visses, and it confuses the attention, whereas now you just get less of the good stuff.
Well, you get 3 very basic, simple plots with less attention to the side characters, less attention to Viss as a main character. Somehow, because it's not a short book.
No.
But it's effectively, think about, you actually get 3 novellas in here.
Yeah.
Effectively. And there's just not enough time to develop all the things that made it so great in the first one.
Exactly. What did you give it out of 5 stars?
I give it a 2.25. Very disappointing.
Very disappointing.
I could lean a little lower, but I think the ending at least was exciting enough that my enjoyment of the overall book ramped up by the end, that I won't say completely flawed.
Yeah, and that is the thing going for the book. This is ambitious, and I the idea of this book, very cool.
Yeah.
I love the idea. Is it accomplishable? I guess when we give our criticism here, I'm going to try to say, hey, is there something that, what could have changed to make me like this more? Not that James has to write for me individually, but looking at this from that lens. Okay. Yeah. So we're both pretty close on our scores here. If you want to see our category breakdown, check on the screen here. They are all there. Now, anything else you want to say before we go into spoilers?
Nope. Let's get right into it.
Spoiler warning for The Strength of the Few. Sorry, I'll stop. Spoiler warning here. Click off if you do not want to be spoiled. All right, give another couple seconds. And?
Emotional impact.
Before that, our plot snapshot.
Ah, nearly forgot.
Just give a brief overview of the plot, just so we can give a quick framework. This will take a minute or two. So do you want to go over the plot?
I'll go over it.
Yep.
So I'm going to talk about it as each character. So I'm not going to make this book blends all these things together. I'm going to talk about each Viss plot separately. So first off, we have Rez Viss, our original Viss, who is now in government. He is trying to politically maneuver himself to find out more information on the terrorist group that killed his friends. And so that's what he's doing. And at the same time, trying to learn more information on what happened to him personally in the Labyrinth, where his relationship with Will is different. He now has these new abilities that he's trying to discover.
So, absorption.
Absorption or adoption, I mean.
Oh, yes, that is
adoption.
It. See, already getting the names wrong, yes.
So, anyway, as Viss is investigating the senators and military that tried to attempt a coup and killed his friends, he eventually, with the help of this terrorist group, he kills many of them, or his dog kills many of them. He confronts them, and plunges the Empire into civil war, of which he is a part of. By the end, he decides to make a deal with Ka, the individual who is planning to cause a desolation that's going to wipe out a lot of people, most of the people. So he makes a deal with Ka to have power to stop the civil war and to take control. And ultimately, I believe, like, be the leader of, you know, be the ruler of the empire. So that's
Rez.
Yep. Then we have Obatium. Obatium is your Egyptian themed world. So
Arrakis,
yes. Viz comes into this desert planet where he immediately meets Olkiskor's brother.
What's it? Seersor.
Seersor.
C-A-E or C... Sorry. His brother.
Name hurts. Names are hard. Anyway, he comes across him. He's down and... Well, no, this is the one Viz that still has his arm.
Yes.
Olkiskor's brother gives him a scarab, gets to keep his arm.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. So, then Olkiskor's brother tells him, hey, we're going to go kill Ka. Like, that's what you're here for. Only someone synchronous, someone who is alive across all three worlds, will be able to kill Ka. All right, break. The feature of this world is zombie creatures. You can use will to bring the dead back to life in this world. So, what does Viz do? He infiltrates Ka City, and through shenanigans and hijinks, he eventually gets to kill Ka. There we go.
And Ka,
I've given you the plot the shortest possible way.
Yes. And Ka at the end is just kind of there.
He's just like sleeping.
He's, yeah.
And so Ka stabs him.
And then Lucium.
Lucium.
This is our more chill lit RPG. Not lit RPG. It's like an MMORPG. Like, you're traveling Skyrim with just a band. Not doing the main quest. You're just side questing in Skyrim and just going, hey.
Yeah.
What's up? And this is your Celtic Irish inspired setting.
Viz comes... He comes awake and he thinks he's still on Rez. He doesn't think he's in another world. And he starts to accept his place. He opens up. He feels more grounded. He feels relaxed. He starts to feel like he has a family again. And then he's pulled into some, you know, hijinks ensue. He's actually,
more hijinks, yes.
He now needs to actually do magic things and fight. So he's learning how to compensate without an arm. He fights. Ultimately, by the end of it, his father comes back to life.
As a Yunctus, though. So still technically dead.
Then
anyways, yep.
Saves his son by sacrificing himself at the very end. And you have Viz take on the King's Champion and ultimately take power.
Comes out of the water and
epic form, and now is one of the kings.
And at the end, we get Viz is making slightly different decisions here, where we see him and Rez basically become the Night King.
Yep.
Right. And oh my goodness, what are you doing? So that's the plot snapshot. Now, do you want to get into our review?
Yep.
Okay. So emotional impact. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 2. Flawed.
I gave it a 1.75. Very flawed. I was a lot of this too is focused on. I'm also judging this as a sequel. Mm. So it's, you know.
Your bar was raised in book one.
It was definitely raised in book one, but specifically what this did to the emotions I was feeling and toward book one. Okay, let's start with this. It continues. You're looking for that Roman inspired, those epic moments, the plot twists, the like, hey, how badass is Viz, the aura farming, all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And the political intrigue, the mystery. So if we're to talk about emotions, it's going for mystery, it's going for those badass moments, and it's going for political intrigue. I think that covers the range. Because roughly. In book one, that's certainly that I was so invested in the oh my goodness, how is he getting pulled? Which direction? All the tension there. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, Viz, look at him kicking ass in the academy. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, those are all the things it's going for. And same thing in this book, but just in a shortened time frame. He doesn't, like, the author doesn't have a lot of time to get to all those interesting things.
Yeah, so where do you want to start?
As far as emotional moments, I'll say right off the bat, the first half, at least, of the book, I was fairly bored. I was not emotionally invested. Many of the scenes did not work as well for me. So that's off the bat there. I will say the reason why I'm not going to be any lower is I was pretty excited by the ending. When things started to ramp up after the Civil War started, things were starting to move and I was a little bit more interested. So I was emotionally invested at that point. However, there's a couple key moments that should have hit harder, and I had the opposite reaction. So specifically, Aquia's death,
that one
was more confusing and weird than emotionally pulling. It felt very tacked on.
Jarring.
Yeah. I was almost wondering, like, wait, how did this happen? Why is this happening? And then we're kind of moving on. I understand the functional purpose of it was we needed to push Viz far enough to, like, why would he make a deal with Ka? Why would he say, like, nope, I desire power? It's because he just lost his friend in a brutal way, effectively.
And we also see Aquia is the one side character in the book who got the most development.
Yeah, exactly.
Of all of them.
Yeah.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah, she was developed to die, and then the rest are shooed away.
Yeah, that is one big... So, why I'm saying very flawed, too, one of the big things that was taken away in this book that really impacted me in book one. So, Calidus' death in book one.
That really worked.
What a touching moment. His friend who was staying... Calidus, who was still in year seven or level seven, what the term was in the academy, because there was this blackmail against him, and you see the bond and friendship with Viz, and his death impacts Viz in a very important way, where we see, okay, Viz is now, screw it, I'm going to governance. Screw all of you, I'm here for my friend, right? I have to figure this out. Right? And that's how this plot starts as well in Rest, of trying to solve what happened to Calidus, and he works with Calidus's father. So this helped in the world-building aspect, but really took away emotionally, where the Yunctus function and the people coming back to life, and specifically with Aquia's death, and then we also see his father, seeing his father come back in Lucium, the intention of that, for example, because it's important. We understand why is Aquia there as this to function, to propel Viz forward. Functionally, why his father comes back to life is so that Viz and Lucium, which is this more relaxed him finding peace, he doesn't even know the other versions of him exist, right? Or he's not aware as much as these other Viz's are.
His father's there for a consoling info dump.
For info dumping, but also so that he can have closure in a way, right? And so that's functionally what it seems to be there for. But what we see is anytime we get these appearances of character that all seem there to serve Viz and then go away and disappear. And so when his father's gone or when Aquia dies, it feels a lot less. It's not to the exact extent of the multiverse problem like Marvel or something would have of like, hey, look, does anything matter? Like, can you just come back to life? But a lot of it functionally just felt like at the end we get Calidus back again, right? That the very last line, that's Calidus speaking.
Yes.
In the book where he says, what is the last line? It's the Calidus catchphrase thingy.
Hail Viz.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think that's Calidus.
Right? I'm pretty sure. So Hail Viz is not itself a like Calidus line, but it's more.
What's it say before that? Yeah, it's his
awry and quiet and utterly. So that was. I can't process. The familiar voice emerges from the murmurs behind. Wry and quiet and utterly perplexed. Hail Viz. I'm pretty sure it's Calidus.
If not, I'd be surprised then.
Right? I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
But with these deaths and with Aquia just feeling so sudden, her head getting smashed in so that we know she can't become Yunctus, right? She's gone. How did you feel that it was handled? Just those emotional moments, because that's supposed to be impactful.
They felt quick and functional rather than emotional.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate problem. And this goes along the lines of these side characters in book one felt like their own characters, and in this book they felt like pieces and plot devices for Viz.
And a lot of that comes back to, since the structure of the book is these three novellas, as you put it, well, Diego's Viz's father, also Viz has a lot of names. Viz, Diego, Luce, Lifenfer, and the other, it's a lot of names.
It's a lot.
But for his father, we're not going to get a lot because that's one third of the book. And so we have to be really quick with it. So he has to act as a function real quick for Viz. All right. In and out. And when his father comes back to me, that's, okay. Now this ought to be something that is goes into the next book, or there's a reason why his father's there more than just to be a quick martyr.
Yeah.
But it just, again, it felt like we also got that with Veritas coming in and giving him the information, who was a big character in book one. Or here's another thing too, with a lot of the emotions coming from book one, the mysteries that I was invested in and the reasons behind what was going on, the answers we got destroyed a lot of the mystery for me. And didn't
ask any new mysteries, or at least not enough.
Yeah.
Going from book one to book two, many questions, and I was curious. I had to know more. Book two to book three, I have way less questions. I'm way less curious about what's going on. Like, we got a lot of answers, and the questions still on the line are more of a function of how rather than why. Like, okay, how is Viz going to circumvent the end of the world and this Ka individual? Like, but there's less why questions, really. There's the big one of, like, okay, what is Ka trying to actually prevent? Like, there's something apparently even grander than the end of the world or the desolation.
And we get it does have that Mistborn vibe too with the mm-hmm. with that Ka-esque figure, but a lot of the mystery that went away. So in book one, where we're asking the question of, like, why did Emissa stab this? Yeah. Oh, well, that was a climactic portion of book one. And then this one answers, Emissa goes up to him and is basically saying, like, hey, I thought you were a Yunctus, like, dead person. And so Veritas, like, told me to, like, act quick if there was anything, any suspicion. So I had to stab you.
Well, it was the whole thing of how Will reacts. And because, mm-hmm. like, how there was a specific thing, and it's because Viz is synchronous, but Will didn't react to your body correctly. And so I
stabbed you. Yeah.
Stabbed you.
Mm-hmm. And then I know you're not, because you, Yunctus can't heal, and I saw you heal, so you must not be Yunctus. Right? So I'm so sorry. Right. And so that, okay, a couple things with that. The mystery portion and the conflict were the issues there for me. So on the one hand, the mystery aspect of that, like, that being answered so puzzle fitting perfectly of, okay, that's why, and it all gets tied back to this magic system. Just, it feels like it's the magic system's so explained, and even though there's some confusing parts when we're asking how going forward, it all fits back to this answer. Mm-hmm. Like, this one answer. So in book one, where there was several different factions going, like, okay, motivation here, motivation. Now it all seems really directed at just the plot had to be simplified to make these three different novellas make sense and weave together. And then on top of that, it's we don't have much time for the conflict. We have to just brush through it because we can't sit in res for a while. So Emissa says this to him. And yeah, Viz is like, all right, I believe you, but I don't fully trust you. Right? That's his answer.
Basically, yeah, I forgive you, but I can't fully trust you. And so that, you don't really see much from her after that.
That's it. It's just, okay, addressed. Like, you gave me the information. That's solved. Okay, I just can't fully trust you. On to the next thing. And it's like, okay, there all that built up intrigue for me. Of, like, okay, there's got to be more to this, right? Nope, that's it. Like, oh, when the father comes back, like, there's got to be more. Ooh, what's he going to say about his childhood? But then we just get emotional moments where his dad and, supposedly emotional moments where his dad and him are talking, and you just see Viz able to bond, and, like, oh, okay. Got it. It's that function for Viz. Oh, it just, the wind was let out for me of the sail.
Yeah.
So it was that a thing for you of just anything from book one that you were excited about? And now in book two felt like, oh, what happened there?
Well, yeah, it's the, and here's another emotional difference. Now, I think I'll mention this more in characters, mm-hmm. but it's a functional problem of, each Viz is mostly the same. Yes, there are some functional differences, but it's hard to distinguish between them, and really makes me feel like, why was this justified on an emotional level? Like, we have three different versions of our main character. There should be dramatic differences. Like, that would justify that decision.
Key on dramatic for you, right? There's differences.
Differences, but not enough to justify having to, like, repeat, because frequently throughout this whole book, there's a lot of juggling that has to be done of all characters by the end of the book need to be on the same page. And so each Viz has to get the same information in new ways without repeating it too much for the audience. And you feel it. It every time it comes up, there's the moments where, oh, this is how Viz gets the information. because he's out of the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in the three different arcs we get, we have to get the same information.
Yep.
To the Vis, but also, it's starting anew with new Vis's and having to get invested again in
all the other side characters,
new training and, arcs, and that you get so little of them. They feel we'll get to that in characters more.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing from book one, that the emotion let out of the cell. I thought it was so interesting in book one how Vis had this opposing viewpoint of the power structure and will, of ceding will, of accepting will, and just denied the system and was struggling with that. That was a big portion of book one and his tension. Now, obviously, Calidus dies and you come into this book and his drive is solving this mystery and, hey, he cares about his friends. I would have loved for that to be more of an issue for him of it early on in the book where he has to accept the will of others before the rock throwing scene, which we'll talk about that in a second, but where he has to accept the will of others and become, that was Octavia or whatever the next step was. He addresses real quick going, hey, like, oh man, I gotta do this, like I don't love doing it, da da da, and accepts this. And then we move on to the next. He's now leveling up in the power structure, essentially. He's accepting will. When this was such a conviction of his in the prior books, and now that whole point is, all right, we need to have this more powerful so that we can, he's synchronous now, he's getting all these powers, I guess, take down the system and all that, right? But the focus on it went away.
It was like that conflict was there where he didn't want to go to the Aurora Columni.
Yeah, later on. Yeah.
But he tries to get, like, he's forced effectively and tries to cede his will, and then magic shenanigans, it won't let him, and different problems happen. So I don't think he actually ever cedes his will to the Empire, but he does receive.
No, him receiving the will. Yeah. When he was receiving, a lot of that was, now is there another way to do it? I'm not quite sure. It's just, that's where it's going to come more of the word character of Vis too. That's where I was really let down by his decision making and internal thoughts there. Let's save that. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else for the emotional punches that really didn't work or that did work? Because I guess why I'm very negative emotionally on it, but
I think the ending was pretty exciting, and the flashing back between the different fights, the infiltration to go kill Kaw at a certain point was pretty fun. The civil war was more interesting in what's going on there, because I thought that was a pretty surprise. Like, I didn't know we were going to get to that this book. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to still be more politicking, but now, things got mixed up. Like, great. Same thing with Lucium. The fights there were pretty fun, and I liked him bonding with his friends. So, like, 70% of the way into the book, I started to be more invested and enjoy it.
You called me on the phone at one point. It was very funny. And you finished the scene where, after he was accepting the will and had to, it was showing in front of governance, right? It was showing his training of throwing the rock.
Yeah, he has to show that just because he lost an arm doesn't mean he's missed a step, that he's still powerful, he still deserves to be the Octor, not Octor.
No, not Octor, you're thinking different. Well, the point is he's...
Top guy.
Yeah, name that we... Sorry.
Sorry.
but yeah, that in that scene, you call me and you're like, well, yeah, this, he threw rock very far. This is the way you were saying on the phone of like, oh yeah, I just finished the scene where he threw the rock
real far.
The context of that is he's missing an arm
and he's still able to be second best out of everyone.
Yes,
down an arm, which is like,
and you know why he's second best? Because we can't have him be too Gary Stu.
He's already a Gary
no,
but Stu.
He came in second.
Yeah.
So isn't that pulling back from the?
But like. He's aura farming. It's supposed to be aura farming.
But realistic aura farming. Because he didn't come in first. His missing arm. Of course, he's set.
Yeah. But then
yeah,
it just doesn't work. Like, everyone's like, oh my God, it's so cool. Viz is just like, he's the best. And it's like, he threw a rock.
Pretty.
I'm not that.
He didn't even, was it 47 instead of 50 like, or whatever the number was?
Yeah. He like threw it pretty far with his his will and everything he could do. And then he's like, ooh, I'm going to use my new special powers and push it a little farther. And then he pushed it a little further. And he came in second. That's not as entertaining.
No, and drawing it, I'm just going to say this last thing on character because this is an emotional part for me, is when he gets meets Seer, Ulcer's brother in Obidium, or in any of these scenes, there's so much of this where everyone's like, yeah, Viss, you're great.
Oh, Viss, yeah.
You're awesome, Viss.
I was going to save that for characters and probably prose.
Save it then. Okay. Do you want to go into the thought provoking this?
Yep.
I gave it a 2.5 stars. Disappointing.
I also gave it a 2.5. Disappointing. Mm-hmm. Chief among these. So, okay, what are ultimately the themes about this book?
Okay, one, it's called Strength of the Few, so we'll talk about what does it mean for the strength of the few, but also nature versus nurture of different environments. This addressing how does somebody change in with different people, with different environments, but also grief is a big focus too on how to react from grief and death, and they're being literally yunked this on here. That's another big one. Anything else?
Also, there seems to be, I didn't notice this as much with book one, but in book two, he has a problem with killing in general.
Batman.
He's got a little bit of the Batman syndrome of like, yeah, everyone's got a little aversion to murder.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But he seems to have an aversion to like killing in self-defense. Mm. And he does, but like there's this weird problem. It's like, oh, I can't cross that line. And, you know, Seeror. I think I got the name right. That actually sounds right. It's Seeror.
That sounds much better than what I was saying.
Seeror basically tells him, Ka is killing lots. He's planning on ending the world. So you kind of just got to kill him, man. Like, what? It's like, oh, but can I do that? It's like, what do you mean? The guy's going to end the world. You got to take him out, man. So, and he waffles on this. And all three worlds, he struggles with taking a life, but he doesn't struggle too much either. It's a weird middling ground
that seemed to be what replaced in book one his struggle of the will system and all that. Now it kind of was directed more into taking lives instead of taking will, because he has to take will in this book.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to be the replacement issue to address conflict.
Yeah, it just felt oddly added here. I didn't know Viz was that opposed to like killing someone in war or like self-defense. That was the stranger thing.
Was the will conflicts gone? You know?
Yeah. But on top of that, another disappointing thing for me is how the Yunctus are handled and death. And there was a little bit of it in Obitium of Viz arguing with whatever person was helping him on the inside of the city. Said like, hey,
starts with an N. Person.
Nicephorus?
I think that's Sun Eater.
Probably Sun Eater.
Yeah, but yeah.
My bad.
Wait, no, is that? Yeah.
Anyway, her saying, hey, the Yunctus are dead. They're not who they were. Like, they are separate. Like, this, yeah, they are moved. They may have the memories, but they are not the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And Viz disagrees with that. It's like, no, this person's alive. This person's my friend. Even though I can control them, manipulate their memories, all these different things. But
there's a lot of interesting stuff there.
I can even make them feel certain ways. But no, they're still a person. They're still the same as where they once were. They're still my friend. I thought there would be a little bit more development of like, what are the Yunctus? Are they alive? Or are they meat puppets? Are they meat puppets with memory? What's the function of the soul? And like this, maybe this wouldn't be as relevant, but it feels like it is for Viz and Obitium with his friend and also his father. Because ultimately,
that's where it would have been important and interesting. But then he's just martyred. That's the part,
but,
yeah.
But effectively, it's his father is his father. There's no conflict here of Viz going, are you even my father?
Like, how interesting would that have been? You know?
Yeah, like, okay, you may have my father's memories, but are you even him? You can be completely manipulated, controlled. Your memories can be altered. Your feelings can be changed. Like, who are you at this point? Like, when you die, what happens? What is a Yunctus, really? I would have liked more into that rather than just, They're alive again, I guess.
And that focus on grief being a central part of this, of it. How to cope. Because Nicephorus, or if I'm that's incorrect name. It sounds pretty correct.
It sounds close.
But that her relationship with her daughter, as well, as also a focus point. Did you find it?
I'm about to. Mesekhet?
Oh, Nesekhet? Let me see.
Mesekhet. Let me see. That one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Did I think it was an N?
I don't know.
It was Mesekhet. Sorry that we were saying. Yeah. That's a great. But yes, that character. Yeah, because her whole role is she's an assassin who kills people. She kills people so they can become Yunctus for others. Say that for world building, it's a cool aspect. But yeah, that's a big thing with grief and some of the answers given. Like when talking about grief in this book, there's a quote of, "When can we move on?" That question being asked, and the answer given is, "When we can live with the regret." It's an powerful thing. And then also, Viss's father at one point in the past told him, "Men become their choices, not their intentions." That's another big thing of like, hey, what do you do with your life? But that whole focus of grief and then Yunctus and the undead becoming a big part of this, why it was interesting themes were here. The layer of interesting concepts and ideas were here. It was more so the execution of them that are not as engaging to deal with, because what you're saying with the Yunctus part of, there's a whole layer of questions you can ask about what is a life? Are you your memories?
And that ties so well together with the idea of who you are, your choices. Of his father said, you are what you decide to do. You are your choices, not your intentions. And we have three different Vizzes who can make dramatically different choices, and we could see very different characters. In this one, Viz and Rez is the same as book one, roughly. He starts going down a little bit darker path of he wants power to protect his friends.
And he's willing to do that. You know, the end justify the means.
Yep. Yep. Then we have at the end, Viz in Obitium is just a little bit more hardened, I guess, by the environment. He's a little bit maybe rougher and sad, but he's more isolated, alone, but he's willing to kill and willing to do some, kill somebody for the greater good. Somewhat similar to Viz in Rez. Then on top, the only one that has some degree of difference, I think, is Viz in
Lucium.
Lucium, who is a bit more, has more closure. Now, we'll save that discussion for characters, but
as far what's as the relevant environment,
for thought-provoking, if one of the themes is you are your choices and
nature versus nurture,
all these things, it would have been very prudent for this book to make them more dramatically different and make where I could easily determine, these are now completely different characters. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of them is now basically a villain.
Which maybe that's the direction it's going
maybe
in the future book. So,
but in this book, at least, not enough.
Yeah, I do think a potential theory for me is Viss becomes the big bad.
Yeah.
By the end of the series.
Or at the very least, one of the Vizzes is going to attack them.
Yes.
And they will be on opposite sides.
Yeah, possibly. Or it could just go the direction they become synchronous. You think it's going that direction.
I initially think that it's at some point he is going to combine back into one. And so basically all the separate skills each Viz gathers will be into one person, and they will be the Ubermensch, basically.
And then we get from a lot the political intrigue part where the hierarchy and the system of will, where in book one, those questions being asked of, hey, are you complicit? Mm-hmm. If you're a part of you're complicit in the system, you're ceding your will to this higher up, how at fault are you for buying the iPhone and for the child labor happening in China, essentially, right? And so for this, we get, what did you think about that dynamic of essentially the greedy people, greedy men, or what's the quote? Said in the book, greedy men want more, just greedy people wanting more is central part of this.
I think it's less interesting than book one. Will of the Many being like, hey, what is, how much responsibility and how culpable yeah. are the little guys that participate in the system? Like, the system could not function without all the small little people to actually participate. But the strength of the few being, hey, greedy people at the top are, you know, just greedy and want more. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not as interesting.
The more interesting is to focus on like, ooh, how at fault are you?
Yeah.
And because so it's
just pretty obvious. Like, yeah, the people that have a lot of power and ultimately killing people and making the lives of others suffer for their own gain. Yeah. Yeah, bad. We don't like that, but that's not that interesting.
And then we have this, in this case, is now becoming a part of the structure in order to take it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least he's trying to, hey, I'm going to take power to not even change things for the better, but just protect my friends.
Yes. That is the motivation.
He is taking power for personal reasons. It's just his personal reasons are a bit more noble than, say, some of the other senators.
Yeah, for wealth or for whatever, for power. Yeah, essentially. So yeah, that's for why, yeah, why I have disappointed for this is I like the ideas it touches upon. Again, that in different environments, that I when I think back to this book, I'll certainly think, man, this has something that there's something there. It just misses the mark on execution for me.
I agree.
Do you want to go on to characters?
Yeah, let's get into it.
This is, am I being too mean with this one? I gave it a 1.5, bad.
Bad.
Yeah, bad.
I gave it a 2.
Yeah.
Flawed.
Flawed for you? Yeah. Talk Vis first, because this is where, this is a core issue.
I could lower it too. Honestly, more thinking about it, we were talking already, but
the two problems is, one, we were complaining about Vis, but the second thing is
Side characters.
Like, that was my favorite part about book one, with the characters, of how interesting and how much they pulled and had their own motivations, where they, so many side characters are sidelined, which, yes, I get side characters on the side, but they're not supposed to be forgotten about.
Was there any highlighted main side character for you?
Aquia, maybe.
Aquia, yeah. And even then, because even from the beginning of the book, I'm going, why is Aquia getting the attention? Like, okay, yeah, she's Viz's friend. They've bonded a little bit, but
then her answer
why her? Why not spend this time with Viz's love interest and try that tension there? But pretty in the beginning, Aquia is just, yeah, they're friends and they trust each other. And there's not much tension between the two of them.
No, it's not tension, no.
So it's just...
just more time with her. Yeah, so... the side character issue. Again, coming back to this, why I have this book is flawed. It's not like James Islington or Islington is... It's already a hard task to pull off. It's the ambitious thing of having these three different plot lines. Of how do you do this? I'm trying to think of more tactful way of like, oh, what would I want to see out of it? Because
the reason why it's hard is not that there's three different plot lines. You could totally have three different plot lines.
Mm-hmm.
So many authors do it.
Yes.
It's three different plot lines that
start in the same spot.
That start in the same spot and functionally are very repetitive in nature. And that all three visits basically have to learn the same things. Maybe they shouldn't have to. Maybe that's something that if all three plot lines were like very, very different, maybe.
And then we get the problem. So when we're in Lucium, as hey, I know that's more peaceful in the chill world where he's able to have peace, whereas the other Vises are not. But we get introduced to the band with Tara and Folk. And because we get so little time, they just feel archetypal. And you have to get introduced to them rather quickly, and he has to get thrown into this. But also, while you're introduced to these characters, you have to also be distracted by the dangling world building stuff going on. So much has to happen because the world's expanding so much, the plot's expanding so much that these characters all feel sidelined. Where in book one, Veridus and his motivations, or Missa, I was talking about earlier. Or even Ulysaur, who hired him in the first place to get into the academy. They got featured in a couple scenes, and we see them, and they provide information to Vis. Veridus, instead of the conflict there, is like, hey, here's what's, here's what the cataclysm is, and here's what the rending is, the splitting of the worlds and all of this. Like, let me explain to you this, what it is. All right, now each character just feels like a world-building point to tell this what it is, rather than that person who seemed to have a soul in the last book, just all were NPCs being like, here's the stuff, this. Here's, so now you have this information in Res. Now here's some information in Lucium.
Compare this to book one of the moment, the scenes that made me actually really like this. I was curious about the plot for many of it, and I was curious about what Viz was going to do, but I wasn't as invested in Viz as a character until in book one, Viz, through a twist, actually has to go back home to Seuss.
Yeah.
And going, oh, how, one, plot-wise, ooh, he's going back home. Is someone going to recognize him? There's a risk. Great. But then just him being forced back as basically...
The holidays are coming up fast, and it's time to shop, but actually have some fun doing it.
Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else.
On uncommongoods.com, they provide art, games, books, DIY kits, home accents, and all sorts of accessories. What makes them unique is that about half of their assortment is handmade by independent artists and artisans.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone. For moms, dads, teens, from book lovers to history buffs, to anyone who hit their quarter-life crisis and started running marathons.
Excuse me. Okay, well, that's my better half, Nicole. She's one of those marathon runners, and I got her a gift from the site. I ordered this custom metal holder for all the races she completes, where there's also a place to put her personal records on there. I'd never seen custom-built case like this before, and so I got her the gift, and I'm gonna surprise her with it.
Yeah. Hey, every time you purchase something from Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Also, every purchase you make, Uncommon Goods gives $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
So shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/2toramble. That's uncommongoods.com/2toramble for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
When someone you love is facing cancer, you want to do more than send a card or flowers that will wilt in a week. You want to actually help. That's where the Balm Box comes in. Our care packages are built from research with over 500 cancer patients and caregivers, packed with items people actually use during treatment. Think soothing, practical, thank goodness I have this kind of relief. For you, it's not just a gift. It's a way to show up in a moment where words fall short. For them, it's comfort, calm, and a reminder they're not alone. From chemo-friendly boxes to mastectomy recovery kits, even options for men, we've made it simple to give something that's elegant, premium, and genuinely useful. And yes, domestic shipping's always free on orders over $50, because making someone feel cared for shouldn't be complicated. So skip the empty get well soon. Send real help, real comfort, and maybe even a laugh. Visit thebalmbox.com. That's thebalmbox.com. Balm, like healing and care. The Balm Box. Because cancer patients don't need bouquets and brownies. They need Balm.
One of the conquerors and has to face his people again, and then his bonding with Anissa worked really well. And just him emotional breakdown of feeling like he's betrayed his people, and should he do more? And then, but seeing some of them have moved on, it started to, like, that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you combine that of ultimate guilt over abandoning his family in Seuss and living within the Empire, feeling like he ran away and as a betrayal. But then on top of that, him falling in love with Anissa. And so he's falls in love with someone who's part of the system, part of the Empire. So it feels like an even further betrayal. And but what plot function did that really serve? There was some plot. Like, he learned some information in Seuss from his old tutor.
It was mainly character conflict and intrigue.
It was mostly, like, large percentage, just character conflict, and we get a moment with him.
Yeah, his worst loyalties. And
exactly.
Yeah, gets all played
we
with.
Don't get that in this book.
No, that conflict is gone. And that has to do with the characters. That has to do with Viz's relationship with these characters that I cared about.
Mm-hmm.
not. And again, flawed is the word I'll keep using here because, you know, other people use their scales differently of what do you mean in your 1 to 5 stars. That is the thing, because I think the way that each vist starts in this book, we could say this more for plot, but it pigeonholes the characters into having to be presented this way. I'm sure there's so much more to them, just we don't get to see that.
I'm almost wondering that would it have been functionally better to have a significant time skip between it?
That's what I think,
and
yeah.
So then we would have three more dramatically different vizes who have gone somewhat through a character arc and training, and so we get to skip some of that stuff, and we get to discover these other two vizes that are now very different people. Mm-hmm. And that would be the, like, ooh, now they're all very distinct. And we get to see how did their environment shape them.
What was your issue with, because we're talking side characters, what was your issue with this in this book? Because that this, he has to be the one that is most important here, certainly. Oh, yeah.
As any, okay. Gary Stu, Mary Sue, that name is thrown out a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about it with romanticity. Now, we gotta be fair.
We have to be fair.
As far as Gary Stu's go, I have not read a fantasy book in recent memory that more closely exemplifies the Gary Stu than Viz. More so than Darrow. Significantly more than Darrow. Like, Darrow actually has flaws and people don't like him. Like, there's more to it. Viz drags down every character around him.
The Gary Stu, does it take away from the other characters? Does the attention, now the side characters feel lesser because Viz can not just solve all the problems, but
it's exemplified. Gary Stu character can often be identified by a specific type of, like, dialogue scene. And it's when characters are going up to Viz and just saying, like, you're the best of us, you're just so amazing, and like, I wouldn't, like, they barely know them, like, but just constantly laying it on of telling us how smart he is, like, Viz, you're just so smart, Viz, like, you're so brilliant, and like, constantly being told our main character is all these things. That is an example of the Gary Stu-esque character. It's the same thing in romanticity of when, you know, all these the male main characters just lavishing on this excessive praise onto your female main character when the female main character hasn't really done anything of praise. It's the same thing with this book, A Viz in Obitium. He hasn't done much.
And really,
he popped up. But for Ciro's sake, he doesn't seem too much.
He made it to this world. That's what he knows.
He made it. But lavish on this praise doesn't make as much sense.
Yeah, it's a lot of the... It definitely stands out in that way. And this, in book one, the conflict with him, the flaw, was him wanting to stay out.
Him wanting neutrality and the world saying, no, you're not allowed to be neutral.
You're forced into this, right? And that, so you could have a Superman character, right? Literally Superman. Take the comics. And he's super powerful. Oh my goodness. Look at everything he's able to do. Like, clearly, unless you have kryptonite, clearly power is not his issue in a lot of the scenes. There's different movies and spinoffs, whatever. But then the intrigue part is like him as a, his relationship with, not Lewis. Lois Lane.
Yeah.
But what about him becoming a man and the conflict with his relationship? Whatever it is, right? It's not necessarily, does a character's flaw have to be their power? Or does their character's flaw... No, just the character's flaw has to inhibit their need, their lesson to learn. Or, like, basically, your flaw is directly inhibiting what you need to learn in your lesson. Like the classic character arc. Hey, what do you want? What do you think you want? Well, in book one, he wants neutrality. Like, hey, I wanted this. Well, he needs responsibility and he needs to attain this. But, you know, his flaw in this character flaw is preventing this. And that's the central point of book one. No, even if he has his badass moments, it comes back to this. This one, he's now going through the power structure.
He's no longer effectively neutral in any version of the book. He's taking a side. He's active.
Mm-hmm.
I think what was added in here is his need is sometimes you have to, you know, taking a life in self-defense and like sometimes like you have to kill somebody in war seemed to be a tiny lesson that was added here in addition to what lines are you willing to cross for your ambitions? And there are some lines you shouldn't cross. It seems like in at least two of them, he's crossed those lines.
And hey, is this flaw? He cares too much about his friends. You know, it's pretty,
Yeah.
Like, okay, the guy who cares about his friends a lot.
Yeah.
And is willing to push the edge. Now, is he going to go more of a villain arc in the future books? He could end justify the means and focusing on that. Is that more of a thing that could get developed? Sure. But a lot of it was that intrigue on his character was more gone. But also, because the side characters get more sidelined, his conflict with anybody else is more brushed aside, glossed over, and also quickly resolved. Like the Amissa scene, why that bothered me so much is like, hey, I'm sorry, Viss. Like this, it's my fault, not yours. Hey, Viss, take less responsibility. Like, hey, it's my bad. Veritas explained the plot. He is now more powerful. Not that there isn't conflict. There certainly is. There's a civil war. Okay. So it's not that there isn't conflict. It's more so this is internal. Yeah. It's a lot of that. Yeah. And so why this was such a downer for me is I want to be fair too, because I love my Roman inspired, my action books. Red Rising was one of my favorite books. Right. I love the action stuff. And so, but I would complain just as much. Well, I have in for example, V. Schwab's Darker Shade of Magic, a character in there, Lila or Leela, one of the two, is like other characters similarly say to her, like, oh my God, she's the best. Like, what a funny, like, keep her around. How cool is she?
She's so funny. She's so awesome. She's like just a pillar of humanity. And it's like, you've met her like for 5 minutes.
She had a couple quips. Like, calm down.
Come on. Slow your roll here.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Viz. It is. Everyone just like showering on the praise because he threw a rock really far.
Yeah.
Like, look, showering on the praise when he, in the Colosseum in the first book, when people think he actually stopped the Anguis from.
Talk about that side character. Ah. Okay. That side character.
Oh.
Yes.
Her. Yes. Mm-hmm. I liked her so much in the first book of Alkiskor's wife, one of supposedly the leaders of the Anguis.
She's great, yeah.
Great. Of like, she's willing to manipulate this kind of dark figure of like, hey, we have no choice. Violence, basically saying like, hey, all the citizens of the Empire are culpable in their evil misdeeds. And so the most functional way to eliminate the Empire's power is to kill the people. And Viz, rightly, is going, no, like the whole point of this injustice of the injustice of the Empire is how they treat the people. If you're just gonna kill the people, what the fuck? There's no functional difference. You're worse. You're worse than them. So that was great conflict. And now she's been taken down a peg. She's now the lackey of this other person that's basically using the Anguis and trying to stop the cataclysm. And yeah, she's just there.
Yeah, and then we have...
She's not interesting anymore.
What about... the character names. I cannot get the character names right. But the character who... is angry at Viss because of in book one. In book one...
That kills Anissa?
Remember in book one where it's like, oh, you didn't save my daughter.
I have a bone to pick with that character. But
what was that character's name? Okay.
Some senator.
Yeah.
But
the senator we're talking about, go ahead. Yeah.
He kills Anissa at the very end of the book, and he, in the beginning of this book, he pits his son against Viz.
Kills which character?
Not Anissa.
Not Anissa. Yeah. No,
Aquia.
Yes.
Kills Aquia.
I'm definitely not Anissa.
Not Anissa. Kills Aquia.
Anissa does not, yeah.
Yes, Anissa's still alive.
Yeah, me. I was like, wait, do I have the name wrong? Yeah.
But kills Aquia, like, crushes her head. And, like, but the whole scene of, like, so in the beginning of the book, going, him trying to get, knock Viz down a peg from his position, tries to get him to give up his position, and basically forces his son into this chariot race, which ultimately ends up his son in the hospital and, like, paralyzed or in a coma and like, oh, Great. Look at that. Look at what you did to your own kid. That's great. What? How are you going to blame that one on Viz? And then he's just so furious that
and irrational.
Viz didn't save his daughter. And it's so irrational. Now, here's the thing. That irrational anger, it makes sense at the level of bitterness. Like, so when people are going like, Viz the hero, he goes, no, he didn't save my daughter. Like, people keep praising you. I am not going to praise you for failing to save my daughter. Like, thousands were dead. Why should we even praise you? Like, that level of irrational bitterness makes sense. But him going out of his way of like, no, I'm actually going to kill your I'm going to kill your best friend in front of your face. I'm going to crush her head.
Make like, you feel how you made me feel. It's like
this is already feeling that. What are you talking about? Like, what are you trying?
What about the terrorists?
Why are you so focused on Viz? Yeah. It's the terrorist that killed your daughter. Like, he did his best. Like, functionally, what did you want Viz to do? What could he have done differently? Like, he's there.
Faster, Viz. Save them earlier.
Yeah, like... Coliseum. Coliseum. They're sitting all around, and then, bam, Anguish come out, laser beam. Brrr, kill him. Kill thousands in a
sweep. Literally suite. Like a laser beam, yeah.
What is Viz supposed to do? It's so illogical. His level of anger is just mind-boggling. It is not a real person. It is not a real character.
And that's where, so when we mean one star, we mean incoherent. And five star is like, hey, irreplaceable character.
That character is incoherent.
And now with a lot of it, with a lot of the antagonists, and Kai, I don't know how interesting he was supposed to be in this book. He wasn't. Maybe somebody else thinks differently.
We get one scene with him, yeah, really.
I don't think it's just the threat of him.
Now,
it's the
I clocked it in the beginning.
Yes.
Of Cobb, like, oh, we got to kill Cobb. Cobb's the big bad. He's going to cause the not desolation cataclysm. Mm. And I'm like, this is basically a. Can I say that? Or is that a spoiler of Mistborn?
It's Mistborn, but yeah, people know. If you know, you know. But move on, yeah.
But ultimately, he's the sub bad. That he's actually. Yeah. Like, I just knew in the beginning, I think I called you on the phone of. He's going to confront, Viz is going to confront Ka and, like, and kill him. And basically Ka's going to say, you don't know what you've unleashed. Like,
yeah.
I was holding back the storm and all that stuff. So, and I was right. I called it in the beginning. So,
and then we
not
have,
as interesting.
No, but then the main thing, though, with these antagonists, that was the interesting thing about book one as well. The pulling in directions that
the president of the school.
Veritas. All of them. Were functioned as obstacles, you know, as, hey, were they bad people? Their antagonist doesn't mean evil, right? It's, they have their own, they're an obstacle for the protagonist. And we've had a lot of that. And now in this one, it's the Anguish, this ether of, okay, they're the bad. And all right.
They have way less of a leg to stand on. And also they are now being just manipulated by this other character.
Yeah.
And so way less interesting.
Yeah.
And also the Anguish and the rest are, not giving, like in the first book, it was always great to see Viz have to, like, see, like, seemingly forced to make a choice and doing all these terrible things and having to hide it from his friends. And you get a little bit of that in this book, but not as much of, like, the Anguish forcing him to do something that he really doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
In this one, it's all mostly what he already wanted to do. Maybe he's begrudging it a little bit, but the big thing that the Anguish make him do is basically go with our new antagonist and confront all the military members about killing his friends and using the Anguish and all this. Viz already wanted to confront all of them. He was all like, that was his goal, is to like find the people responsible and bring them to justice. Mm-hmm. Now at the end, he's like, oh, okay, I'm going to tie them up. I'm not going to actually kill them. We're going to bring them to a court of law somehow. And then his dog is just like, nah, we're going to eat them now. And he kills them all. So, but that's a... Did the dog go a little far? Maybe. But that was what Viz wanted. Like, he wasn't pushed to do something he wouldn't really otherwise want to do.
And the different motivations you get for him, he's most different in Lucium, where... Since his environment is so different, you get to have him in a more relaxed state, him able to have some sort of peace at the beginning, at least.
Yeah. Before, and even by the end, he unburdens himself. He t- tells all his secrets to his new friends, and so feels very removed, like things that he's been hiding for years.
He's able to say, what's my real name?
Yeah.
You know, who am I? And yeah, so he feels that is part of the lesson there, and then look at him in Obidium and look at him in Res.
Mm-hmm.
And still having all these secrets and still having to circumnavigate the system. All of these more... the focus point, but also all the more plot pieces are there. Versus Lucium, we see how he is, he gets a what would be a deserving rest. I think what he kind of wanted, even in back in book one,
mm-hmm.
of hey,
you want
having
just
a family
leave.
Or just, yeah, he wanted to leave just having because his father being dead, but then coming back to life. That was another moment of him getting to
say goodbye,
have his family there and. Maybe that's a part of the reason why the Yunkdis, there wasn't more touched on is that person real or not, because we needed to have that moment with this of feeling that true mm-hmm. consolation. So, yeah, that was certainly the case where the lowest thing for me was certainly characters, because this did not work in the three worlds for me. The antagonists were much worse and the side characters were flatlined. So in all respects, I can't name a character that I particularly liked in this.
Sure.
So
I liked Tara as it went on. Like, she is archetypical, but with the slight change of, she's the archetypical, like,
she's the female princess, right?
The female lead that's super strong and, like, you know, rough on the outside. However, in most other stories, like, the archetype is that she's far more mean to other people on the outside and actually bitter and, like, you know,
yeah,
hard exterior. And this one, she's actually just pretty kind. She's quiet. She's serious, but she doesn't look down on people. She doesn't have this big chip on her shoulder. She doesn't have this huge ego right from the beginning. And I'm like, ah, cool.
She's also an heir just like Viz is.
Yeah. So she seemed, I liked her. She's that was the one break of the mold of, you know, this, you know, the strong female side character that normally, super badass and would be have a chip on her shoulder and all this stuff, but she doesn't. So, I'm like, well enough, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, no. nothing compared to Calidus in the first book.
Yeah,
or even Anissa. I liked Anissa.
Aiden as well.
Aiden was there as well.
We get him in this book
a little bit.
Yeah,
the important scene of, you know, Diago Viz telling him the full story. But
yeah.
Want to move on to plot?
Let's do plot. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I should probably lower it, but I give it a 2.5.
Disappointed. I give it 2 specifically flawed, because this is the flawed structure for me.
Agree with you actually already.
Of just the word flawed, right?
Yeah, the right word is flawed.
Right. Yes, this is where we're talking about let's talk about maybe some fixes we would talk about. And again, tastes are subjective, but yes.
One potential fix is making this book one of the Vizzes. Like, the full book is Obitium Viz. And so the whole time is spent that. And so we could do something like that. I think you would have plenty of time to develop these new characters and see where Viz goes in the direction. Or focus on one of them. And we get little, like, in between the, like, sections, if they're, you know, in between parts, you get one chapter with seeing what's happening in the other Viz, and just seeing a functional difference. Maybe
that's maybe a way of doing it. Maybe having them appear at a midway point of the book or something. A big structural issue that we both have is having him start in the same point and then having to have each training arc, each lesson, the information repeated across Viz's. And so even when we got, I think even the way it was weaved together was sometimes jarring points where the chapters would come back to the same world. And so we would be in Res, jump back to Res. And there would be a time, like a couple week time jump, or just a section of time that it felt like I was missing a chapter or two. Of after the Civil War and the conflict, now we're going like, wait,
Civil War just
and it's like, happened? Wait, where are your friends? Like, what happened? Whose side is that? What's happening right now? And I'm going, okay, that's all right. Where are we here?
It also feels all three point of views are given fairly equal attention. And it's fairly evenly split across all three.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of them should have been prioritized.
Rest, if anything, was, I don't know what the percentage was, feels like it was, but you're right. It was pretty split, like, somewhat evenly.
Page time, feeling, like, the only reason why I think most people will pay more attention to that is because you have a whole book previously in that world and have a deeper connection to it. And there is more plot, it's more political, it's more complex of a plot, even though all three of them are fairly simple plots.
How would you rank the three worlds and their plots? Which one would you say was your most invested favorite to the least?
I was most invested in Viz and Rez, then next was Lucium, then Obitium.
Fair.
Like, I know Obitium has more plot relevance, but I liked the Viz. Like, the fact that Viz was different in Lucium was enjoyable to me.
Yeah. When you look at, let's look at Obitium of just, hey, there's a god. Gotta go kill the god.
Go kill the god.
the function of that, it does help with the world building in some regard, but the function of these worlds felt more like, hey, we need to make sure the reader has a bunch of information, fully understands, hey, there's a lot to explain with the synchronous, and there's so much to divulge, so many answers that needs to be given to the reader here. I would have preferred being way more out of the loop. I would have more preferred the plot keeping and
I think a jump, a significant time jump would have made things better, because then Viz learned a bunch of stuff, and then throughout the plot of the story, we get to find out.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than like us seeing Viz figure this stuff out, Viz can already have figured it out off screen. It's like a year. A year has happened between the books that we get to jump right into it. Viz is now basically three distinct characters. Maybe one's more villainous, like, oh, just bitter, on edge, whatever. Like, going, oh, what the hell's happened to him? But now all Viz is
It doesn't have to be flashbacks either. It could just be you learn it
as it's going
as
on.
As it's happening, yeah.
Yeah, and like, so Viz has a plan. He's like, I'm going to go kill Kaw. And you go, well, who's Kaw? And I think a time jump would have... I think that would be the one thing to change, if I were to do anything.
This has obviously the Red Rising elements, Mistborn elements too, but... I'm not going to spoil this at all. It's not really a spoiler, but Red Rising, the Golden Sun, literally jumps a year.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense. I won't spoil any of it, but that's because we don't just go, okay, let's have training arc part two. We are like, okay, no, we're in a new situation. And this is what we get filled in of what happened throughout the time we were gone. Or, hey, look at, I'm not trying to compare it because every book's on its own, but just as thoughts, right? Like Sun Eater skips literally hundreds of years, decades go by between books, and it's fun to find out, ooh, what did we miss out on? You don't have to start right off the get-go. Now, yes, there was a climactic moment. We found out, like, oh my goodness, he's in three worlds. What just happened? Do we need to start right off from where we left off? I don't think so either. I think the plot can be extremely different, but we don't even have to have, like, we could have him already in governance and, like, a while in or something. We don't have to experience, even Rest doesn't have to start off right away.
And maybe it's taken him a year of like meticulous investigating. We already get to see he has some degree of relationships with some of these new characters and senators. And
yeah.
So we get him in the thick of it being part of governance.
Yes.
And investigating on the side. And maybe we're coming close to like his final push. Like he has a plan to take down these corrupt senators and corrupt military operation that killed his friends. And then plot continues from there. We get more, because the Civil War happened close to the end. Maybe the Civil War is a lot closer to being a midpoint or at the end of part one instead.
Right.
And then we get that Civil War conflict through everything.
Yeah. That would be very cool. And how interesting would it be? Again, mystery. The book one had so much mystery and intrigue going into book two, but how interesting would it be if we start off with a Viz? Now this would be slightly different, of course, but starting off with a Viz who's like who's either straight up villain or straight up gave up or something extreme from the get-go. Already Viz is different. Like, what the hell happened to you in this world?
I think that would make most sense in Obitium of how torturous that world is and how like it's a struggle just to survive. All right, cool. Make him the tortured one. He's going a bit more evil. Maybe in that world, he's actually gathering a Yunctus army to fight against Ka, kind of deal, and take power.
Something, right? Yeah, that's a big portion. The time jump would have been great. Just structuring this differently of not having your let's have this interact with characters who are sidelined and then train a bit, get to know them. And
something I don't think could be fixed is just pure time. No matter what, the big feature of book one was how complex the plot was.
Yeah.
And the intricate, like, three separate factions vying for Viz's attention and loyalty. And it was a complex plot with enough time to give us some calm character moments.
Like in Sosin,
no matter what, the fact that it's divided into thirds, you're not going to get the same level of complex plot. There's nothing. There's nothing you could do there. And I think that just is going to be the step down unless you only focus on one, or maybe one of the Viz's is in like almost flashes only. Maybe the Viz in Lucium is we get snapshots of him at the end of every part. I don't know.
Now take any epic fantasy and plenty of just regular fantasy stories. You have multiple point of view books where a third of the book is with a third of the book is with Kaladin. The third of the book is with one tenth of the book is with Arya. Pick your book of you just have small segments of this character. Why is it different here where, hey, we still get other fantasy stories, do a third of the book is in this plot section? Why doesn't it work in here as much?
Well, I think it's just a difference of what we liked in book one. There's a reason why these other multi-POV plots, that one character's POV is typically not very complex, even with writers like George R. R. Martin. Guy is a really good writer. He can make a very complex plot overall, but say for Arya's plot. Arya's plot's not very complex.
But Tyrion's is.
Tyrion's is.
Yeah.
Then again, maybe
and we're talking book
tier.
Two right now, Clash of Kings specifically. But sure. Then, yeah.
But do you know what I mean? If it's those are fair, you do have to simplify, and then it all comes together at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, we're getting multi POVs where I think work best when they're all culminating together, that they're kind of interacting to basically make one whole plot by the end. And we get different sides of the same conflict going on. Yeah. This, it's three separate, like they're on different worlds. Different villains, like they're all almost completely separate. There is some crossover.
Ka's
not relevant in basically two of them.
And that what's in, Obadiah, he's the most relevant.
Obviously. He's most relevant, and like the very end of Rez, like going, Ka's the guy, and then just like immediately, like that's one chapter at the very end.
Yeah,
he's not relevant at all for most of that story.
Yeah, and so with this specifically as well, yeah, so having those, also what it is too, as you're continuing point of views with different characters in other books, you're also continuing building off of the stuff that you were already invested in. This, we have one plot line that's continuing, like Rest is that's our main Viz, and then the other two are essentially brand new stories starting off. It's in book two, starting off to sure they have the prior knowledge, but they're in a new world, new characters, everything, and so all that intrigue from the main plot in book one, it's just you have to reconvince me to be invested here, and at no point. So I know others might have enjoyed those more, the At Peace in Lucium or the Obidium, finding out cool stuff about the world. But there was nothing there to grasp onto in those plot lines where I was like, oh, look at that tension. Even with the Obidian one of, hey, let's go kill Ka the God. I'm like, all right, this is some greater world stuff with synchronous stuff. All right. It was interesting to find out about the Yunti, but all of the interesting stuff had to do with the world and none of it about the tension, the conflict. Like, none of it was about the plot beats that happened.
The best way to do a grand plot is... yes, there's a grand end-of-the-world type of deal, but to the character, it's more personal. Mm-hmm. It's a personal journey. In this one, it is, with Rez, you get more of that, with Viz trying to save the world and, you know, making a deal with a cop, but ultimately it's to save his friends. It's why it's most relevant. And, but it's just kind of general. I don't feel it on a very personal level.
And this is the most disappointing because I think
Obatim especially was more, we're actually just going to save the world. That was it.
And that's the part, too, because James Islington, his strength is plot, typically. Like, you read his Lucanus trilogy, but just from reading Will of Many, like, oh, plot was his standout feature of the book. And so that was the most disappointing part. I will say, so as negative as being, you know, you were given some positives, too. I think that I hope this is more growing pains of even though this one, just the structure is really tough with this, I see the... conceptually, if you were to just jot down the notes of this book to kind of summarize it and put all the plot points down, I would look at that and go, like, oh, that's neat, right? I would see the idea of that and go, okay, I haven't seen that before. That's unique. Now, execution's more important than idea, obviously. Yeah. But I like the soul of it, the ambition of it. I mean that in a genuine way. I really like the concept of this book, and that's why I'm very disappointed as well. And saying mostly negative things, but that having three of the same characters touching on those themes we were of the different environment you could change in, there, if just some things were worked around with the plot, I could see this working.
Yeah.
But, like, hey, this could work. I don't think it's an unachievable book. It's not like something so complex was written that it can't be done.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I'm with you. Yeah, it really could be, but...
We didn't talk like King Ronan at the end and that whole with Tara, did you want to say anything with Lucium? Any plot points that we didn't mention? The very end, mom and sister are back.
Yep.
As well.
Mom and sister Calidus are back.
Yep. Likely Calidus, right? And
Calidus.
And they're Yunkti and Yunktus.
Which I want to go in... This is a good segue for world building because I have a question right off the bat.
Would you give it out of 5 stars?
Work. I gave it a 3. I'm neutral.
Also gave it a 3. I'm neutral on the world building.
Yeah. Now, part of this, and I'll get off a main confusion, is how the Yunktus actually work, functionally speaking. So, the rule I somewhat understand is, okay, if your head is basically caved in, like you have no head, can't make a Yunktus out of that. Can't heal that. But if it's, you know, stabbed in the heart, that'll work. Or stabbed in the gut. Like, died through, you still have most of your body parts intact. And maybe your organs don't work anymore. But the Yunktus can bring that kind of stuff back. With specifically Viz's father, Viz's father was hanged. And then weeks later, brought back to life with the scarab and comes back alive. Then what happens? Then he's like, they get all the information out of him and then they take the scarab away, like make him dead again. And then like a month later or something, like some significant time later, you have this, one of our main antagonists, who's the new leader of the Anguis, brings Viz's father back to life with another scarab and says, hey, go protect your son. Okay. So what I'm hearing here is it's not a one-off. Like, you can't, like, if you kill a Yunktus, like, you can just bring them back again.
Unless their head's gone or something.
Unless their head's gone. Unless a destroyed body. At the end in Lucium, Viz's father, like, takes the scarab off himself and gives it to his son to save him. And then drowns and all. And then Viz, hours later, tries to remove it and, like, give it back to his father to save him and bring him back to life. And it doesn't work. Why? Why does that not work? It's clearly not, like, the Yunktus thing is not like a one-off. You don't get to, like, you have one chance to bring them back to life. And if after that they're dead forever, that's never been implied through any of this stuff. And it's functionally showed different. So that's my big question. So I
didn't think about that when reading it. I'm sure I'm missing something, though.
Yeah, because...
So I'm sure there's an explanation. I don't want to say it's, like, bad or good. I just didn't focus on it.
Yeah.
You could be right. You could definitely be right. I did not think about that.
Because I'm pretty sure it's not a... I'm pretty sure it's not a one chance thing of like, if once you're a Yunctus, if you become dead again, you're dead forever. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's a question you have. Maybe clarified in the next one, or maybe I didn't read as closely on that part. So I'm curious. Let us know if there's an answer there about the Yunctus. Is that a complaint or just question?
Yeah. Mostly question. Could be complaint.
Depending on was it answered? So yeah, let us know if you have an answer to that or the Yunctus part. Because the Yunctus as a function was, they are different than the overseers that we see in Opidium. And that Ka controls the overseers, and they're not NPC like, but they have this predetermined pathway that they're going through. And that was a neat scene that we get in Obatium with Murkat, or that assassin character, of avoiding them in the villages and showing like, hey, you know the pathways that they take and walk. It felt very RPG like you're in Assassin's Creed. Very cool. The thing with the world building in general, what I liked, so I'm neutral because what I liked was more of the nitty gritty, magic system stuff, explanation of the cataclysm and the rending and all the information we got to expand the world got bigger. The stuff I didn't like as much was more the setting and understanding where are we in each scene of just... Mm-hmm. That felt more hard to imagine. Now, that wasn't a feature of book one either, of like, oh, the settings, just brilliant. It's more so that the seeds we got with the world, although they expanded it, I'm asking less questions. So, I'm immersed, I get it, but I'm not as excited. I'm just going, all right, I think I get this. Now, even though, hey, I don't understand the full Yunctus functionality, so it's not that I'm an expert on this, but just, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot was answered. And it makes perfect sense. It's just how much mystery, how many questions were asked. As you put it way earlier, it's more the how, not the why. And at the end of book one, with this world, there's these labyrinths and this academy where Veritas is sending people into this labyrinth to go where, for what reason, and is the answer as simple, at least this is where I'm led to believe, is the answer as simple as like there was a big bad that split the world, and it's like, cataclysm event, bad, threatening, apocalyptic event.
Well, now by the end of this book is there's something worse. There's something worse than the cataclysm. Ka is trying to use cause the cataclysm because, 9 and 10 die. But that's better than everyone.
Every single person.
So Ka is trying to prevent something even worse that we don't know about, but that's the function of it.
And is that because of reading that other series we read where it's more so similar to that? Is it why it wasn't as interesting? Maybe.
It could be. It's just clocked it from first part one.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the magic being used, adoption, right?
Adoption.
What did you think about the magic system being explored more in Will, how it functioned and synchronous, synchronous?
The magic system is fine. Mm. I don't like it as much as his previous series. In his previous series in Lycanus, one magic system is fairly normal and it operates a lot like, kind of just Will itself of it's... life force power, you could do things with it. Mm-hmm. What was interesting is how do you get to break the rules? Hey, now there's this separate magic system that can manipulate the first magic system. The second magic system almost has no power on its own, but it can manipulate the other magic system. Super fun, get to break the rules in fun ways. Mm-hmm. You do get that exact same thing with Will if you're synchronous, you get to break some of the rules. Of before, the rule was someone's concedes will and that's theirs. You can't control it. Now Viz can actually adopt and take the will from others. And then how the Yunctus function of because of that feature, he's able to receive will from the Yunctus more so than what he has given. And so it's a cascading feature of he effectively has infinite power or infinite will. Mm-hmm. We get that, but I just don't enjoy it as much as this other series.
Fair. Yeah, the will functionality as well, now that he has the power. So it was more a question of what exactly is it in book one, because he didn't have will.
Yeah.
now we get to see the use cases. We get to see, even when he gets the will initially, he explains it's just he feels more energy. He feels more, as they said, as he was, it was explained to him, it just feels more. He feels more. Maybe that's the way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It certainly is.
It, for the most part, there's more interesting things he can do with it. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it just makes him more powerful and faster, stronger, you know, more aware, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The most interesting thing or cool thing he did with his will was forging all those little triangles that he keeps like bound to his chest that he can turn into functionally a type of arm, or like not an actual arm, but looks like he has one.
Yeah.
Or like he uses it to put into a mask, and like that is his weapon.
Yep.
That was cool, but
yeah.
Yeah.
You want to go on the pros?
Sure.
I gave it 2.5 stars, disappointing.
I originally have it at 3.25. Mainly because I think the action scenes are written well. Mm. Most of the dialogue is fine to good. But particularly there's some dialogue scenes that really made me cringe. So why did you give it your score?
Yeah, I gave it more disappointed because a lot of the dialogue, also Viss's voice in each one, he is the same person. So it's you can't really make them different. So it's not like you're switching between different character point of views and getting a different character voice. So for this, it was a lot of the dialogue scenes with friend characters, but also like a couple of the scenes with his dad I'm thinking about. I think a lot of those emotional moments didn't hit because of the dialogue, where it was more caricature type and also not necessarily eye-rolling, but just a
little too direct, a little too on the nose.
A little too on the point, a little too just telly. Just and the descriptions in general being very telly. Now, is that bothering me a little bit more because it didn't like the most? I was more able to focus on it since I wasn't lost in the immersion of like I'm really liking this book, probably. But I more of the disappointment was clearer when my excitement wasn't there. Like when I would read a line because I'm not emotionally invested, I'm going like, oh, that's like it's just telling me what to think about this, or it's telling me like, hey, look, these two characters. Now, at the same time, the action scenes are really well written. And
I think many of the dialogue scenes also still work between mostly between Viz and his friends. When they're when his friends aren't just talking about how great Viz is, I like the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
When they start just waxing into like, oh, Viz is just the best of us.
Yeah.
Don't like it. Kind of cringe.
Yes. And I'm trying to see if I should. It's okay. I was gonna say like a section from. Do you want to just pull up a random section?
Sure.
All right. Let's just see. These are could be too critical. What chapter you want to go off of?
Random page.
Okay. This is chapter. Here we go. I'm trying to go to the beginning of a chapter. Let's go. Chapter XLIV. The hell is that? Okay. Loss is hardest. Alyssa Sor once told me, when it is quiet. I am on sentry duty tonight. A thick, damp chill lies over the land as if to underscore the end of summer. A blanket of fog that swirls and creeps over the hills and through the shadowy trees beyond the reach of the torchlight. The inky waters below the Crannog shift and slurp. Starless black glowers above. All has been quiet for hours. And for the first time in a while, as I lean on the railing and peer into the swallowing darkness, I cannot help but think about the world I left behind. My idle thoughts first turn to my family, not unwillingly, strange enough. This sort of solitude reminds me most of Seuss. The weather is the counterpart, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, that's well written. Yeah. No problems with it. I think what the thing is, when I'm reading that initially, maybe this is the thing that I think is going on in my head. Now, it says to the door of Elysosaur's windowless office slides open, but so we know what world it is because Elysosaur's there and mentioned, right? But every time the POV would change, something about the style of things without getting the character name or seeing like, hey, it's this symbol, it took a while to be like, okay, where I'm here, got it. I'm in this head, which kind of signified to me, and early on in the book, that's more okay because, hey, they're pretty similar. But as their situations changed, how could I clock that? Oh, I'm definitely in this Viss's head. Yeah. Got it. I'm I'm in Lucium Viss's head right now because he's having these. That was tough to distinguish.
It almost even maybe
at
would
the
have
end
been,
of the book.
It maybe would have benefited of different perspectives with each Viss, just to make it more distinct.
Third person. Yeah.
One of them gets to be third person.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Second person for another.
That would be even trickier, but but yeah, yeah, like one being honestly, maybe keeping two of them as first person and one third person. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that would have made it a little different.
Yeah. It's not poorly written. It's just.
That's why it's somewhat good. Yeah, yeah. I liked the action scenes. That's most fair. Of the dialogue descriptions are fine. Mm-hmm. It's just some of those dialogue scenes between, like, just praising Viss comes across as very cringy. And some of the more surprising scenes that, like, not Anissa, but Acquia's death.
Yes.
I don't think was written very well, and it should have been better.
Let us know down below if you like the book, dislike the book, your criticisms, the things you enjoyed. I know this one is more focused on the negative. That always will happen if we both give it a negative score or both give it a positive score. So let us know what you think. Convince me to raise this. I want to like this book desperately. Book three, I'm less excited for books. I really am less excited for it. I'm not going to be like, right off the presses reading the book,
but we will probably we'll read book three.
Yes.
I'm not as jumping out of my seat for it.
Yeah, I'm not as chafed to bits, as the Brits say. Yes, chafed.
No.
Chafed.
No.
Chafed.
It's chuffed bits.
Chafed. We'll see you all next episode. Let us know what you think.
Bye. Bye, everyone.